Welcome in, everyone, to the Batflip Podcast. My name is Damien, here with Matt and David. This week, we're going to go over our opening weekend overreactions. We'll hit on the Mets and Brewers series that was heated there. We got some same faces, new places with some fresh starts there. We'll hit on the main injuries. And, of course, we told you we were going to defer the Shohei Ohtani story to this week, just like he did his contract, and we'll do that this week. We will talk about that gambling story. But before we get into all of that, David, how are you doing on this fabulous April Fool's Day?
We're doing good. Like I said last week, we're trying to buy a place. We bought a place. Now we're trying to sell a place. So a lot of work, a lot of busy, getting the place cleaned up and all that. Well, a little bit less time on baseball front, but I was able to tune in for the Cubs winning today. So that was always a good one, but tough first series against the Rangers for my squad. I know Matt's team had a little bit better weekend. Matt, how'd you do this weekend?
I had a great weekend. I'm fired up about baseball being back. We got to see some really cool things. The Braves going up and smacking the Phillies around over the weekend, which was awesome. You had the old there were a lot of just basically it was the most like memeable weekend ever with some of the things that happened. Yep. The A's having like 100 people at their games. They had three times as many people at their AAA game than at their major league game. There's a few moments we'll talk about in a little while. The Mets veteran of the day on opening day was Seymour Wiener, which was kind of awesome.
And a really good one.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. It's been a fun weekend of baseball. I'm super excited to talk about it.
Yeah, it was a really good weekend. Especially when you face the Cardinals, who just seem downright terrible right now. As a Dodger fan, at least there, and that top three just looks really, really good right now. So, but that's enough blabbering about the Dodgers for now. We'll get to it a little bit later. But let's just look at some of these, kind of opening weekend overreactions here. We'll highlight some of the players that have, substantial performances, like Nick Martini hit two homers on opening day. Tyler O'Neill has like five straight opening days with homers, which is insanely wild.
It really
just
is.
To believe. We have Adley Rutschman had continued on his opening day success. We had the Wild Cubs Rangers controversy game, which was insane. We were all watching it and bantering. It's been a lot. So Matt, real quick, what is like your biggest like opening day overreaction thought so far?
Yeah. So I think my biggest overreaction from the weekend, was, I think it's the Yankees. The Yankees went to Houston and swept the Astros in four games. And the way that they did it was really impressive. It was really an all-around performance. The Astros didn't do all that poorly. It was just like the Yankees just kept coming back in games. And Juan Soto absolutely had an amazing weekend. They had a lot of their like other guys kind of step up a little bit. They had, like Oswaldo Cabrera had a really good weekend for them. The pitching was pretty good. The bullpen performed pretty well. There's a little bit of concern for the Yankees about their bullpen depth. That performed really well. And I mean, it kind of reinforced. I picked the Yankees to win the AL East last week, and I didn't feel great about it. And the Orioles have looked really good so far too. But man, the Yankees going to Houston and sweeping the Astros was very impressive to me. That's probably my biggest overreaction, is just that the Yankees are for real, and I think the Astros, there are some reason to be concerned for them too. So we'll see what happens with the Astros. I think they'll probably be fine, but I really was impressed by the Yankees. That's probably my biggest overreaction for the weekend.
Oh, no. I got two teams that I like, right? I think the Pirates and the Diamondbacks are really interesting right now. The Diamondbacks obviously went to the World Series last year, so, take that with a grain of salt. And the Yankees made the biggest, position player, non-Otani position player acquisition of the entire offseason. So the Yankees being good, not all that surprising. We kind of thought it was coming. I think they're all in our playoffs. But man, oh man, dude, the Pirates are 5-0. And they, I don't think Damien mentioned, but Jared Jones pitched this weekend. He looked really, really good. Paul Skeens is still sitting in the minors. He was throwing 102 in his start the last time through. They're getting contributions up and down their lineup. They're, that's a team. They started out hot last year and fell off. in the NL Central, we've talked about how wide open it is and how many opportunities there are. Pirates might be one of those scary teams. And then, you know, the Diamondbacks have my player of the week. We'll talk about him later. And, you know, they signed Jordan Montgomery. That's a huge deal for them. I think that team is playing with a lot of confidence coming off a, you know, a World Series run. Think the Diamondbacks and the Pirates, you know, my overreaction would be those teams are both really good, and they're going to follow up on what we've been kind of talking about over the last couple of weeks with a good year.
Yeah, as far as the Diamondbacks are concerned, it's not that hard to look really good when you score 14 runs against the Rockies in one inning, which was just obscene, stupid that happened. You know, but I'd say my biggest overreaction, it's probably just because I watched, you know, every single one of the games there, and it was that, but man, Nolan Arenado might be cooked. Like, he struggled to end last season, and he does not look good right now. Like, he was like 0-for-13 to start the year, and his one hit that he had was like, it wasn't even a hard hit ball that you thought was going to go, you know, anywhere. It's just like, he pulled it down the line, just kind of got out in front of one. So that might be my biggest overreaction, is like Nolan Arenado, who, you know, has been an all-star for, you know, knows how long now, won a gold glove every single year he was in the majors until this last year. But man, his bat looks really, really slow. But also within that same kind of overreaction thing, the Cardinals might be one of the most fun teams to watch this year. Just seeing the bottom of that lineup have Victor Scott, Mason Winn, and Jordan Walker. Like, Victor Scott, it is absolute. Like, Ollie Marmol literally said, hey, whenever you want the green light on the base, just go. And like, he was doing that. Like, it was insane, like, how fast he is. So that might be my biggest overreaction, that like, Arenado might be cooked, but the Cardinals might be fun to watch in that aspect. But one part of the opening weekend that we wanted to hit on just a little bit more was that Cubs Rangers controversy game, just a little bit, real quick, because we were all watching it there. But it was a close game, back and forth, and then it was like, what, I think, was it Michael Busch was on second base? They were,
yeah.
Was it a tie game at the time, or they were down by one?
It was down by one. We were down.
Yeah, down by one.
They were second and third, I think, down one when it happened.
It was just Busch was on third.
Busch was on second, wasn't he?
I think he came from second to third. I think two runs scored because when Jonah Heim didn't pick up the ball because he was complaining about the call, the second run scored.
Either way, yeah, we are very not smart on this podcast, as you can tell. Anyways, there was a foul tip ball that was like clearly foul tipped. Jonah Heim was like claiming, like, hey, putting up his glove to the umpire, like, it's foul tip ball. The ball's rolling to the side over there. The umpire's like, nope, it's a passed ball. Anyways, the one or two runs, whatever it is, ended up scoring there on it. It was clear as day it was foul tipped, though. But that's not a reviewable call. And everyone's like, knew, hey, the Cubs just, or the Rangers just got screwed here. The Cubs got incredibly lucky. And then like the next inning, Travis Jankowski came up and hit like the tying homer or something, yeah, you know, which like pinch hit tying homer.
Bottom of the ninth.
Yeah. It's just, it was all like so weird. And David, I know you didn't say it much, like you weren't able to watch much, but that is your team. And obviously you were in,
yeah,
you know, did see it. Like, what were you thinking in that entire incident and like the aftermath of whatever happened?
I, you know, when I see it, you know, Jonah Heim pick up the ball and it doesn't happen, right? Like, don't sit there and argue with the umpire, and you hold the runner, and because Busch didn't go initially, right? So I looked it up. He had made it to third, I think. Either he made it to third on the wild pitch, or he had made it before, but he started on third base. And he starts to go, stops, and then sees Heim is turned with his back to the ball, and he just runs home. And it's like, you got to just go pick up the ball first. You can argue the call later, because, yeah, it was a bad call. And that was going to be one of my other overreactions, is I think the umpiring this year has been worse than it's been in years.
It
has been horrible. Busch got a call on him today. The ball was 3 feet. It was like a foot above the strike zone.
I saw that.
And it called as a called strike. And I'm sitting there like, Michael Busch is a rookie trying to figure out how to hit in major leagues, and you're calling strikes on pitches at his neck. Like, I feel like the umpiring has been horrible. I think that's a product of it, so.
There was that call in the Braves Phillies game on Saturday too, where Max Fried threw a pitch right down the middle on a 2-2 count with bases loaded. They called it a ball. It was literally right down the middle. It wasn't even on the corner or anything. Yeah. It was just, and it wasn't one of those where like the catch someone stealing and the catcher jumps up or the catcher set up like way inside and slings his glove across the plate. Like it wasn't a perfect frame job, but it was not like he caught it weird or something. And I couldn't believe they called that a ball, and it ended up costing Max Fried his start because he walked him on the next pitch, and then he gave up 3 runs and they got pulled in the first inning. So that was a pretty big deal in that game, and the Braves ended up winning, but it probably hurt them a lot yesterday because their bullpen was taxed from that. So, a lot of bad umpiring calls. I saw the one today that you were talking about with Michael Bush, and there's been some rough ones so far this year, but hopefully, I will say one thing, it is early in the season for umpires, and sometimes it does take a little bit of time to get where you're seeing the ball really well. You see it with hitters all the time, and I guess, they'll probably be a little bit better as the season goes on, but I think it's definitely a good time to, look into that challenge system a little bit more, as that's something that's been going on in the minor leagues for a while now that it seems to be working pretty well there.
Yeah, it'll be something that they'll look at in the future and CBAs and whatever. But, some other stuff we wanted to hit on from opening weekend real quick was some of the injuries that happened while we're talking about all this. In that Cubs-Rangers series, Justin Steele went down with a hamstring injury on a dribbler down the line. He went to go lunge for it. He was throwing today, which I saw, but it does. I think council said that he's supposed to be out the month of April.
Yeah.
There you had Royce Lewis, who would let, his first at bat hit a homer, picking up right off the playoffs again. His second at bat was, I think, either a single or a double. But as he was rounding second or getting there, he hurt his hamstring as well. Sounds like he's going to be out, at least a month, if not longer. They're thinking it's a pretty long-term injury. And then Sean Murphy, he hurt his oblique during a swing as well. He was immediately put on the IL. So he'll be out for, those usually take 4 to 6 weeks, somewhere in between two, depending on the grade of it. But some key players for these key teams that are going to be out for a while. So definitely wanted to hit on those injuries real quick.
Yeah, the Royce Lewis one is pretty big. I really think he was headed for a breakout. That really sucks too. He's dealt with so many injuries, and he came out on opening day and hit a home run in his first at bat of the year. We're so excited to see him, and then he gets on base again, and he's rounding second. Pops his, I think it was it his hamstring or his quad?
I thought it was his hamstring.
It was either way, it was a upper leg muscle.
I think Caminero was his quad today.
I didn't even see that. But yeah, and then of course Justin Steele. That really sucks. You hate losing your ace like that, especially for a team like the Cubs that, I think the pitching depth that they have is not – they don't have a guy to replace Justin Steele. Like, that's a pretty irreplaceable guy. Imanaga looked really good today, but I think you were kind of counting on Imanaga to look really good as part of being with Justin Steele in the rotation. But, that's a big, big hurt for the Cubs. And Sean Murphy, the Braves do have Darnold, who is fine to play every day for a month or so. That hurts a lot, though. Sean Murphy's probably a top three catcher in baseball right now, so that hurts. They did say it was a grade one oblique strain, so he probably won't be out a super long time, but they said he would be out a quote-unquote a while. So my guess is probably like Damian said, like 4 to 6 weeks probably, and he'll be back. But you don't want to start your year with an oblique strain. Those can be tricky. It's kind of like pitchers with shoulders. There's so much strain on your oblique in a baseball swing that's one that can linger. So hopefully Sean Murphy, they take it easy with him and he comes back full strength when he comes back. So it really does suck to see so many injured players in week one.
It does. Yep. And, you mentioned the pitching depth for the Cubs. The depth is great if you're replacing the fifth starter. It's not so great if you're replacing the ace. And it was Albert Alzolay is the closer. He gave up the home run to Jankowski. it highlighted all the issues that we talked about a couple weeks ago in that NL Central preview with the Cubs. Like, man, they felt like maybe just a move away in that top of that rotation, maybe a move away in the very back end of that bullpen where, you know, if you're moving Justin Steele into that ace spot and you're moving Adbert Alzolay into the closer spot because of injury to the guys you picked up, you feel more comfortable. But now it's they're riding very, very nervously. Alzolay was really good to close out Sunday. I'm not worried about Alzolay, but I wish he had a buddy back there taking the save chances, and maybe that'll be Julian Merriweather. But yeah, I mean, for Steele, it stinks. And I really do hope that Imanaga, you know, today looked, you know, like he can maybe take over in that spot. But I'm also very disappointed for Royce Lewis and the Twins, man. They made the play, won a playoff game for the first time last year. Things are looking up. They're favorite in the AL Central, and Royce Lewis might have been their best player this season. And, you know, to see him already down with an injury again after all the injuries is disappointing for sure.
Yeah,
it sucks for the guy who has, like you said, battled.
I was going to say the good news for the Twins is that, you know, Royce Lewis isn't out for the year, and they are pretty – I mean – I guess one of our overreactions could be how good the Tigers look this weekend, even though it was the White Sox they were playing against, especially their pitching. But the Twins are clearly the favorite in the AL Central, so they could probably weather the storm until they get him back. I think that's the one thing that really hurts about Justin Steele is that they're going to be in a dogfight for the division. So, you know, any losing him for even like a month is a big deal if it costs you like two games. That might be the difference at the end of the season. So, but yeah, that's it sucks.
Yeah, it does suck, and there's not much really else to say. You guys covered that. So let's jump over to talking about the Mets and Brewers opening series and really the Rhys Hoskins versus Jeff McNeil saga that was. You know, Rhys Hoskins made a play into second base trying to break up a double play. He slid late, but within the rules, you know, like it was a hard slide you see all the time. McNeil wasn't happy about it, so he basically stood over him and started yelling at him, and then there was a whole thing. Benches cleared. It really wasn't, you know, much of a brawl or anything, but it was just still really funny. Like you see the complete different sides of it, especially how the game has turned now. You know, we're protecting players more, but yet most fans are like, that's a baseball play, and what's the real problem here? You know, obviously it's the Mets, so we're all going to laugh at the Mets because they're easy to make fun of there. But David, what was your whole take on the Rhys Hoskins, Jeff McNeil like situation there, and do you think there's really any merit for McNeil to be mad at?
I mean, baseball player is going to baseball player, right? And the Mets have been on the receiving end of hard slides before. That said, I mean, I don't think anything Hoskins did was particularly egregious, and I'm here defending the Brewers, which I hate defending the Brewers. Feels icky. But, you know, that Hoskins didn't come off the bag. We've seen hard you're supposed to try to interrupt the player any way you can. That's your job as the base runner if there's a routine ground ball, right? But you can't try to hurt him. I don't think Hoskins was trying to hurt him. He just slid hard, you know, and obviously McNeil taking exception to that. And look, you know, we've had our first brawl of the season, had to get it out of the way sometime. And I think Rhys Hoskins got the last laugh, hit a home run, Brewers swept the Mets. I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know about the attitude in the Mets clubhouse. A lot of pressure over there, and the Brewers playing a little bit more relaxed right now. And I think that carries over from how the handling of that incident was handled by those Mets infielders.
Yeah, it's extremely hypocritical for Jeff McNeil to get upset about that, because he's been known to slide like that pretty often and in way worse like ways than what Rhys Hoskins did. And I mean, I don't understand why he's so upset. I mean, it's one thing, and I'm sure he's frustrated because they're losing, and he, you know, that's fine. Like if he kind of said after the game, kind of like, you know, we weren't winning, I was frustrated, I went back and looked at it, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was when it happened type thing. But he like kind of doubled down on it. And then, you know, they threw at Rhys Hoskins the next day and they threw high after he hit a homer. And I think he had a 2-run double in the first inning, and then he hit a homer. So, you know, then their reliever came in and threw at him. I think Johan Ramirez maybe was who it was. But anyways, they threw at him and he kind of threw up at his head. So, I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, I don't understand why it's one thing to throw it. If he slid 10 feet off the bag and you throw at him in an uncompetitive game, that's one thing. If he's like, that play was not bad at all that he made. And I mean, I don't, you know, I don't understand why the Mets are so upset about it. So, you know, I think there might have been a little bit of history with Jeff McNeil and Reese Hoskins. I think Jeff McNeil's been upset with him before, so that's probably a big part of it. But man, because of course with Reese Hoskins being a former Philly too, you know, in the Mets. But man, that was. I thought it was pretty egregious what the Mets did, honestly. And
oh man,
I mean it. You know, I don't know. Like that, you know, if they're gonna be like that, then they're not gonna make friends. They're gonna get smacked around this year.
I think Reese said
the one thing I want to push back on. Oh, go ahead, Benjamin.
I was just gonna say I think Reese said it the best. Go ahead. Is that there's a way to police the game, and like players have done it for a long time. But throwing at somebody's head's not the way to do it. Like, had they came out and just like thrown at his leg, you know, and hit him and sent the message, warnings would have been issued, and then they would have moved on, and nothing would have happened. And he would have been like, "Hey, you didn't like it, but you policed it. Like, that's how it was. Let's go on from there." But that's not how they took it. And then it now once they were getting them beat by him again, the Mets were like, "Oh, we can't have this," and like, let's just take it up to another level.
All right, I get to push back on both of you then. I don't think that the right move is to throw at Hoskins at all, right? Because obviously he already believes he's not doing anything wrong by sliding in, and the umpires didn't either. So if you're throwing at him, not only are you saying, well, now you're in our head, but you're also putting a guy on base in the late innings of a game that you are already, you know, the Mets were, I think, 0-2 at that point, right? Like, they've already lost two games in the series. Like, that is quite simply a complete loss of cool from the team. Like, at that point, you let it go because you've made your point. McNeil yelled at him. The bench is cleared. The point's been made. They didn't like it. Throwing at him on top of that makes everybody like assured that this Mets team is does not have it together. They're not going to be able to handle the rigor of the season. Maybe that's another one of my overreactions. Mets are terrible. They're going to be like 90 plus game losers this year.
One last thing to mention here is, and on the what you were talking about, David, is that the Mets have a brand new rookie manager in Carlos Mendoza. So this is his first time he's ever had to handle something. And I think that he just handled this really poorly. Like, that was just I think that's kind of the takeaway for that thing. And, you know, he's a rookie manager. I think it shows a little bit of weakness in him that he can't kind of come to the players and say, "Hey, look, this wasn't that bad." Like, he needs to have some kind of discretion and policing of it within the team and keep them on the right track. But it seems like he just kind of leaned into him saying, "I'll go throw at him," you know? And
see, that's where I'm going to push back against Matt on that aspect, because first off, baseball players are never going to keep cool heads. I mean,
that's the job of the manager is to help them, like,
but here's cool the thing off. as a rookie manager, like, you have to show what kind of manager you're going to be. And if he's saying like, "Hey, I'm going to let you guys as a team stand up for yourselves," if it's right or wrong, who cares? Like, we can argue that all day long. Like, if it was, you know, Bruce Bochy in that situation, it probably gets handled differently. But as a guy who's two games or you know, whatever into his managing career, like, if he rolls over there and was like, tells the team that, like, the team could turn around and revolt against him as a rookie manager as well. Like, baseball is a way of, like Nate mentioned in the chat here, like, baseball is a game of unwritten rules, and most of them are frankly stupid. And this is probably one of them where, like, hey, you have to react to somebody doing something to your team. And if you don't, you're looked at as like a bad leader. I mean, we saw it with like the whole Jazz Chisholm and Miguel Rojas situation that's been going on too, about the banter back and forth there. But I think that's part of it too, is like, he couldn't just say like, "Oh, hey, we can't do that." Like, because he's three games into managing in New York, like, he'd get roasted alive if that came, you know, from there anyways. But, so let's jump over, just highlight some of the, you know, free agent people or, you know, international players that came over and have had really good starts to their new, you know, the new season in a new place. You know, looking at some pitchers real quick, we had Jack Flaherty, you know, in his Detroit debut, went 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, no walks, 7 strikeouts. I believe that was against the White Sox. Frankie Montas had 6 innings, 4 hits, 0 runs there, you know, 0 walks, six Ks as well. Corbin Burns was, you know, started the first game of the American season, you know, against the Angels there. He had six innings, one hit, one earned run, which was a Mike Trout homer, but 11 strikeouts there. And then today, you know, Shota Imanaga in his Wrigley Field, you know, Cubs debut, had six innings, two hits, zero runs, nine strikeouts. I think he had like a no hitter through 5 2/3 or something. So just some really good pitching performances there for some guys with, you know, fresh places with a fresh start kind of.
Yeah, I was impressed by those. I think that the top two are a couple of those guys on like prove it deals, and, you know, Jack Flaherty not walking anybody was big for him, I think. You know, now to be fair, they were playing the White Sox, so it was obviously very impressive, but they were playing the White Sox. So, that was awesome for him. And then Frankie Montas, you know, he's a guy that he's just been injured. Like if he's healthy, this is the kind of talent he is. And it's very good for the Reds to see this out of him already, because he's a, you know, he's capable of being like a, you know, at least the number two in a good rotation. So if the Reds are going to make a run this year, then Frankie Montas could be a big part of that. It was really nice to see him debut well. And of course, Corbin Burns looked awesome. He looked back to like the previous to last year form. And David can talk more about Imanaga, but he was very good today as well. You know, that was the Rockies, but he was very good. And, you know, looked like the real deal. So, and the Cubs desperately need that, especially with Justin still being out.
Right. And, you know, want to note, Corbin Burns is my Cy Young pick. I've been hoping for performance like this, and I think the Orioles have too. And, you know, they carried it on. Grayson Rodriguez was also really strong against the Angels this week. I think Grayson being able to step in there and see what Corbin is able to do. They both have, you know, such electric stuff that Corbin's presence in that rotation is going to amplify, you know, the performance, I think, of Grayson Rodriguez and give him something to build off of going towards the future. Frankie Montas is interesting because he's going to have to play in Coors Light in Cincinnati, where the ball is going to start jumping out in the summer when it gets warm. So, you know, maybe I won't overreact that Frankie Montas is going to be really good, but no, definitely a good strong start for a guy who's been oft injured, a lot like Royce Lewis, with a lot of talent. So hopefully Frankie Montas can keep it going there. And then Shota Imanaga, man, what a debut. Just absolutely electric. Guy came in his leading press conference singing "Go Cubs, Go!" Like this is every Cubs fan's new favorite player. I promise. Like this guy's awesome. He's a great dude. He's really likable. He was fired up on the mound too. I was really excited to see that guy showing a lot of emotion already, and I hope he brings that energy and brings that every time, because that's really fun. And he's gonna give up a lot of home runs this year, though. I'm telling you, a couple of those got knocked down by the wind today. So he's really got to locate well, but the way the fastball comes out of his hand, he's going to get a lot of swing and misses on that. And the splitter was killer today.
Yeah.
I want to mention one more. Chris Sale looked really good too. I didn't put him on there, but
my dark horse for the side.
He was throwing 98. So,
well, if we haven't talked enough Braves yet, we'll get to another Brave right here in a second as well. But, you know, let's jump over to some hitters now, and we don't have as many of these, but, you know, quick start, the Braves pulled the Braves here. We had Jared Kelenic. He's, you know, what, 5.45 batting average so far in the year, 2.11 WRC plus. He's looked really good. You know, Teoscar's hit three homers for the Dodgers so far. It's good to see there. But obviously, I think the big one we have to talk about, the big, you know, big position player move. We hinted at it when we were talking about the Yankees sweeping the Astros there, but it's the start to the season Juan Soto's had. You know, he's what, 9-for-20 with a homer, 5.29 batting average, 600 on base, 765 slugging, almost a 300 WRC plus. And not just that, but, you know, he looked pretty good defensively. He threw a runner out at home in what, the ninth inning there to help save one of those games as well. So the Soto to the Yankees fit has seemed like it's seamless as well. And, you know, he could be primed for that MVP season that I think we've all kind of been waiting for from a Juan Soto.
Yeah, and he hadn't even played a game at Yankee Stadium yet, where the short porch and right is. Of course, now he did hit one of the Crawford boxes. His home run was like a 340 feet, but it was. He looked very impressive. I mean, he's always going to be that on base percentage guy, and He was clutch too. He actually made a good defensive play, throwing the runner out at the plate on the on opening day. To that would have been the, I think it would have been the tying run in the ninth inning. You know, and I mean he had a fantastic debut for the Yankees. And the one thing I liked about Juan Soto's weekend was that I think the Yankees were missing a little bit of attitude last year, and I think Juan Soto brought a little bit of it. He looked real fiery out there. He looked fired up, and I don't know that Juan Soto really looked that fired up last year in San Diego. I think he probably was, but you know, it just seemed like he wasn't the same kind of, like, I mean, he's always been a pretty, like, you know, emotional, like, you know, guy. And he didn't seem that quite that way last year. I don't know if it was just a bad fit with the clubhouse and with the, you know, the management stuff, but he looked really good for the Yankees. And, you know, that's the guy that can drive the train for them if they're going to do really well this year. So that was a very, very big one. And I do want to shout out also Jung-Hoo Lee made his debut in the U.S. That was a big signing. And he looked pretty good too for the Giants. You know, he had a 370 on base over the weekend and a 500 slugging. He hit his first home run. He looked pretty good as well. So he did not look overmatched whatsoever in the big leagues. So that was another one I just kind of wanted to shout out. His numbers weren't as good as these guys, but he was still good.
Yeah, Juan Soto. I think that maybe the biggest development is that defense that Damian talked about, right? You know, we've talked a lot about Juan Soto and you know, the prospect of acquiring him last offseason and then the prospect of signing him to a mega deal this offseason, right? And a lot of that talk is prefaced by the fact that he is not a good fielder, but he's putting in work. Right. The Yankees have put him in right field, which is a far more defensively, you know, difficult position due to that throw to third base that you're going to have to make. Juan Soto's arm is good. Right. And if he can provide a little more range than he has in the past, I think Juan Soto can at very minimally be a decent right fielder, if not even a good right fielder going forward. And they've talked about how much work he's put in the outfield. So, you know, for a guy like Juan Soto, with all the offensive upside, with the plate approach of like Joey Votto or Ted Williams, to also be able to, you know, prove that he can play outfield at a solid rate that isn't detrimental to the team, that'll be, I think, very important for the Yankees, and then for his free agency at the end of the season, as he kind of goes into this contract year. You know, we see guys play up all the time in their contract year. If he can prove he can play the outfield, I mean, what he'll probably get, he'll get more than Judge, like, you know what I mean? He's going to be a big contract.
Yeah, I don't think he's better than Judge, but I think he could get more because of the health track record.
And the youth, right? He's 26. Judge was 30.
Yeah.
So.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what his free agent contract looks like compared to that, what was it, 14 or 15-year, $440 million deal that he supposedly turned down with the Nationals. I'm interested to see what that looks like in free agency now.
I'm going
to
be very interested by that free agent deal because I think that Boris is going to want to get him paid like Ohtani did, but I think Ohtani is just an entirely different animal. Right. So I think that's going to be another one of those free agencies that's just it's going to be a mess because they're going to be asking $700 million and teams are going to be asked telling him we'll give you $500. Like they're going to be hugely apart.
I just think he's a Yankee, right? Yankee fans in the chat will be very happy to hear, but I do not think the Yankees let him leave New York by the end of the season without a deal. It could get nuts, similarly to how it got nuts for the Dodgers, right? The Dodgers end up paying a ton of money for Ohtani, but they do it so creatively that, you know, that money's not going to get seen for a while, and the technical you know, amount isn't all that much. So, you know, I think the potential for Boris is he asks for more AAV like than Ohtani got in that. What Ohtani's deal was like $447 million against the luxury tax or something
it's
like that.
40, it's 46 per year, basically.
Yeah, I think Soto and Boris try to beat that as opposed to the 700 total guarantee, because they know that Ohtani, just as the DH, that's kind of what he's getting. And then the rest of it is kind of the because he can also pitch on top. I think that's what they try to beat. And that at least is something that other teams are going to bid on. So,
and remember,
you know, that's me pretending Boris has been smart, which no, he wasn't this year. That's for sure.
No. And remember Juan Soto, you know, I don't think he's leaving New York, but he might, the other team in New York might go after him because they've got like a ton of money coming off the books, and I think there's a, you know, there's a possibility that Steve Cohen does throw the $700 million contract at him just because he's got, he can. Like, right. I think that is a possibility that he could just, that he will just go crazy with that one. So,
you can't
we'll
forget
see.
The
It'll
Yankees are the Yankees, too. The Yankees will throw money. They can throw money around, and they will.
They
so.
Can, but I don't know if they'll, I don't think they'll think it's worth it to throw that much money at Soto. Because I mean, they just declined bringing back Montgomery because of money. So,
yeah, they spent Rodon. So,
we'll have plenty of time to talk about the Juan Soto free agency
agency
year. Let's not get off the rails here.
Yeah.
And if one thing we've learned is that Scott Boras is not smart in his decision making and asking prices from this offseason. So let's not bet on that. So let's jump over to the big story, which is what we've been waiting for a couple weeks to do, trying to get more information. Which not really much more has come out, but we have to talk about it sometime. And that's the Shohei Ohtani, gambling scandal storyline, whatever you want to say. And no, this Shohei Ohtani gambling story does not affect LeBron's legacy, as somebody's asking in the chat. All right. But this story really broke. I think it was Wednesday. It was the first night of the Korea series. And it was after that point, after that game, in the clubhouse, basically Ipe Mizuhara, who is Shohei Ohtani's or was Shohei Ohtani's translator, ever since he came into the major leagues with the Angels, was a good friend of Ohtani's, basically said that he had been illegally gambling through a bookie and there was going to be a story coming out, about, some investigation into it and this and that. Well, part of the reason why that has come up was because the money that was being sent to the bookie to cover the fees was about $4.5 million had come from an account with Shohei Ohtani's name on it. So it had been wire transferred from Shohei Ohtani's account to this illegal bookie, which is where this whole situation came in to play. And then there were some false stories or, misread stories where like Ipe had told people like, oh, Ohtani had covered the debt for me. It was him doing that. Well, through the story stuff, Ohtani had never knew that any of this had happened. He had a co-signer on the account. I'm pretty sure it was probably eBay anyways, had direct contact there. But this has been a massive story. There's going to be a long federal investigation into it. We're going to get a lot more information before this is ever resolved. But, it's been obviously eBay has been fired by the Dodgers and everything. He's under investigation. Ohtani's been very vindictive in his statements of saying that he was stolen from. This is basically, he's defrauded or whatever. But it's a massive, massive story. And I know you guys both have thoughts as well to it. So just whatever the story is going to lead to, we don't know yet, obviously. But David, what was your whole thought when this whole story came out? And then what we've kind of figured out in the 2 weeks or week and a half since it initially broke?
I mean, my first thought was, this guy's just taking the fall so Major League Baseball doesn't lose the face of their, the face of their league right now, right? That's my first thought off the rip. And I don't know that that is accurate, but that was my first impression. Since then, I've kind of, acknowledged the fact, I think Pitching Ninja is a literal lawyer, and he made a video on this noting that the language Ohtani is using, which Ohtani would never make these statements without counsel from the lawyer, from the lawyers and them telling him what to say, but he's been making the statements of having been robbed, defrauded, et cetera. And those are not statements that you can make typically unless you are like as the guilty party, right? You make those if you are the innocent party that has been robbed of, and he's got lawyers consulting him. So it's like that you generally don't do that. At the same time, like that kind of the pieces would fit if Ohtani had that issue, but with a federal investigation, you're going to find all that out anyway. So it's not really something that, he's going to be able to hide if it was him. And I really hope it wasn't, because Ohtani's an incredible baseball player. And I don't think that, that should be something, we should lose out on Ohtani's performance because of this. At the same time, right, if it was him, if there was some reason that he is gambling on games, I don't think that's necessarily even just something that's limited to Major League Baseball, right? This is a sports problem where gambling on games, which is fun for all of us, right? We love gambling on games. We'll do it now and again, too, all the time, right? But if you've got athletes betting on games, if you've got referees betting on games, which we have documented proof of in recent years is happening a lot, then we're losing the, you know, it's like sports are being run by the sports books. And you see it all the time with all the ads for sports books and stuff. It's like, you know, ESPN brought to you by ESPN Bet announcing that Otani's gambling scandal and some players being suspended from the NFL because he's gambling. Like, well, it's illegal for the players to do it. Why are they allowed to sponsor sports pages? You know, it's like, it's very hypocritical, and it's definitely eating away at the integrity of sport if the players are also participating in the gambling.
I will say from that real quick for you, the information that has come out, especially from the bookie, who there has been some interviews with the bookie, is that even Mizuhara, if it is, you know, Otani's fall guy or whatever, there were never bets on baseball. So he wasn't betting on his baseball games. That has been said. So not like he's betting against himself. It was, you know, other NFL, college football, NBA, international soccer. So just say he wasn't betting on actual baseball games that he was participating in, or that he had insider information in, at least. But go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about Otani being the GOAT. I mean, I guess he just wants to be like Michael Jordan with the betting. But
hey,
but yeah, he. I'm with David on it. The first thing I thought of was, man, Otani. He's been betting on games, and he's using a bookmaker to. Or he's using his interpreter as the fall guy, and but I do think a lot of the stuff that's come out has kind of made me think probably not the case. Like David said, there's the stuff about, you know, the way that a lawyer would word things of if you're being accused of something, you know, and then I just don't I don't think either one of y'all mentioned yet that the interpreter himself has been like a pathological liar about his history. Mm-hmm. Like, he had lied on his resume about where he went to college. They said they had no records of him attending the college he said he went to. I think it was UC Riverside. Is that what it was? And then, he said, you know, I think he had put on his resume about working for the Red Sox, and the Red Sox said, no, he didn't work for us. So, there were a few things like that. And I do know that he has had like legitimate, like other jobs in baseball. Like, I think when he was in Japan, he worked with Americans that were playing over there to help with the interpretation. So, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, and like David said, it is a big issue with all sports. As far as Otani goes, if he were betting, I wouldn't really care that much as long as it's not on baseball. Now, it's with an illegal bookmaker, but I am interested in what MLB's reaction would be. And just in general, if anybody else did it, like not necessarily just Otani, but just like how would they react? Because obviously baseball has the history where it's a no tolerance for betting. You had the Black Sox scandal where that was point shaving. So that was different. And then you also had the Pete Rose, which was betting on games, but baseball games. So is there even a rule against betting on like football as a baseball player? Like,
there's not.
So the biggest thing would be that it was with an illegal bookmaker in an illegal state. And if he could get in trouble for that, and I don't know how MLB would even react to that. So they probably would draw a pretty hard line if it were true. But I think there was a guy, it might've been Jared Cozart, that someone said, I don't know if anybody remembers Jared Cozart. He was a pitcher back about 10 years ago. He played for the Padres, Marlins, Astros, I think. Anyways, he had gotten in trouble for betting with an illegal bookmaker, and I think he only just got like a fine or something. Yeah. So I don't know that Otani would even get in much trouble if it were true, but it's not a good look for the sport to have this happen. And I just think it's crazy. I mean, I was watching the game and I was like, oh, that must be Shohei's interpreter in the dugout standing next to him the morning of the story breaking. Like, he was, everything seemed totally normal. And then all of a sudden you got the story breaking. It was just crazy. But we'll see. I mean, hopefully Shohei didn't do anything wrong. It would suck for the sport of baseball for him to be involved in a big scandal. And, you know, hopefully hopefully we do hear more about exactly what happened here, because there are a lot of things that don't line up totally still. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. So I'm going to try not to go as much in depth because I'm probably going to be more biased on it. But there is no rule for baseball players to have. They can bet as long as it's not on baseball. That is not a thing. Like in football and in the NFL, you're not allowed to bet like at all. It doesn't matter. You can't bet on anything.
I think in the NFL, you can't bet from the facility. Like, that's what those guys got in trouble for last year. I think they were, like, in their practice, then they're, like, the team facilities, and they were betting on stuff.
Well, that was a bigger issue, but I don't think you're allowed to bet at all if you're in the NFL.
I don't know. I might be wrong. I mean, your team's the one that got the player banned for life, so.
Yeah. Well, he didn't get banned for life. He's with the Eagles now.
But Isaiah Rodgers?
Yeah, he was only banned for a year.
I thought he got banned for life. I thought they had a player that did, but maybe not.
No. And like you said, like, we don't know all the information yet. The story broke after that first Korea game. So everyone's like, well, look, he's standing next to him in the dugout. Like Ohtani knew. Here's the thing is Ohtani didn't know, because even Ohtani's lawyers and representation to get to Ohtani had to reach out through eBay. And like eBay told them, oh yeah, Ohtani knows about it. It's fine. Like he was covering my debts, or he was covering the debts of a friend. So Ohtani apparently didn't hear anything about it until the clubhouse meeting. And then that's when he was like, what's going on? And stuff. So it's like you said, there's going to be a lot more stuff. It's a federal investigation. It could be years before we ever figure out the whole truth here. Like David and Matt both said, the way that things were worded in his conference, like his press conference about it, you don't say that if you're guilty. And there's going to be a way they're going to figure out through wire transfers and through this and that. Like if Ohtani was the one sending the money anyways, they're going to figure out about it. And if he was doing that, he opened himself up to a lot of legal issues now. And I don't, like you said, I don't think that the league itself would react any bad way as long as it was proven that he wasn't betting on baseball, because they don't have a rule against that. It was just that it was an illegal bookmaker. So that's where it's going to be a weird situation. He'll probably just get like a fine or something. It wouldn't be any suspension. I highly, highly doubt it. But anyways, we said we would talk about it. We talked about it. And if we get more information that, you know, it leads to this being a bigger story than it even already is, we'll come back at some point and bring that here as well. So let's jump over now to Players of the Week. And then a new part that we're going to do to Players of the Week this year is we're going to also do a Moment of the Week. So we used to pick one pitcher, one hitter each. This year, we're just going to pick one player and then just kind of highlight a moment from that week in baseball that, you know, we wanted to talk about. Sometimes we're going to be biased because those are obviously the games we watch the most. Most of the times we'll try not to be. But we're going to start with David. Let's start with Players of the Week first, and then we'll jump to Moments of the Week. So, David, who do you got for your player this week?
I'm the only one who went with a position player for this week, and I went with the guy who tied Mookie Betts in the lead for RBI in Major League Baseball this week in two last games. That's Lourdes Gurriel. You know, fresh new contract with the Arizona Diamondbacks coming off a World Series appearance. And Gurriel had 8 hits this week, 3 home runs, 10 RBI, 6 runs scored, 2 walks and a stolen base. Just a plethora of counting stats, right? He was awesome this week. And obviously this weekend they were playing the Rockies. You know, we mentioned that the Diamondbacks looked good, right? The Rockies are going to team that's going to make teams look good, I think, this season. But that's, you know, 10 RBI in a week is nothing to sneeze at. That's a monster performance. And, you know, I think Lourdes Gurriel is a guy who has been really consistent on that front, you know, being able to have those really hot weeks that can carry an offense from time to time and overall end up looking like a league average hitter. But, you know, what might even be most interesting about this whole bit is that he walked twice and he hasn't struck out a whole lot early on. Very early for those trends to stabilize, but the fact that he is putting together a few good plate appearances gives me some encouragement that maybe he can develop a little bit into a more dangerous designated hitter going forward. Maybe a little bit of a, you know, straight pulling at the strings, a little bit of the numbers, but I'm really excited about this week from Lourdes Gurriel.
Yeah, I'm with you, David. That's a good pick. And he feels like one of those guys that at some point he's going to have a really big season. And maybe this is the year that he does. Like if he's kind of like Yandy Diaz, but he plays a reasonable outfield where he always has hit the ball on the ground so much. But if he can get a little bit more ball in the air, then he could have like a huge year at some point. But the guy I picked was actually a somebody who probably flew under the radar because he actually got the loss in his game, but it was Garrett Crochet. We talked about last week how he was going to be the opening day starter for the White Sox, and everyone was making fun of it, but I was like, you know what? Garrett Crochet was a first-round draft pick. He was a top 15 pick. He was a very highly thought-of prospect coming out of Tennessee, throwing extremely hard. He came up to the big leagues. He got injured. I mean, he had comparisons to like Randy Johnson and Chris Sale, like coming up, and he got injured, and he just dealt with injuries a lot. But the talent's been in there, and I think that we saw in that first game, six innings, no walks, 8 strikeouts, 1 earned run, 5 hits against the Tigers. Tigers aren't a great offense, but I thought it was really impressive for Crochet, and I believe it was actually his first career start, too, to come out there on opening day in his first career start and look as good as he did, and to pitch 6 innings as a guy who's, for his entire career in the big leagues, has been a reliever. So I thought that was really cool, and I wanted to shout him out. There were a lot of good pitching performances this week, but that just kind of stood out to me as something that, you know, I guess it's kind of confirmation of me saying that he was, you know, a high upside type guy this year. And, you know, it'd be good for the White Sox if a guy like him or Soroka or one of these like former prospects who's been injured a lot and now they've got him in their rotation actually just takes off and has a great year. It'll be big for them going forward.
Yeah, it's also worth mentioning when we're talking about the White Sox here, we totally forgot that they re-signed Mike Clevinger today. So there's that. But anyways, no, Crochet's been a hot topic. I mean, I remember like 2 or 3 years ago, David and I were having like an argument over if he was going to be a starter or the next Aroldis Chapman, which he, you know, played the reliever for a while, and now he's doing the starting game. So it'll be interesting to see, because I always thought like he should be a starter, like try him out there and see what he's got. So it's been good to see him have at least a good start. It was his first career start, like you said, so. We'll just have to see how it goes and how the longevity of those innings pile up.
But, classic inverse Aroldis Chapman arc there. Aroldis was a starter first. So yep. The old inverse.
Yep. So the guy I went with this week was Shane Bieber. You know, he pitched against the A's, so it's not going to be as impressive because the A's are terrible. And they decided that today after 3 games, Esteri Ruiz, who was hitting .429, they wanted to option him to AAA for some reason. But really, it was more the stuff that we were seeing from Shane Bieber. We have talked a lot about, you know, how, well, he might be cooked. His stuff wasn't looking good. He found more on his velo. I think I saw him hit like 94, 95 at times. His stuff in general looked really, really good. He went 6 innings there, 1 walk, but 11 strikeouts. This level of stuff was when we were talking about like Cy Young level Shane Bieber. That's what this stuff looked like, even though it was against the A's. I think it would have played against any team. That's just how good and crisp things were. There were a ton of pitching performances we could have went with, but I wanted to highlight Bieber. He did go to like Driveline or one of those places this year. He did have the more velo, and so I'm gonna be excited to see what the rest of the season looks like, because if he's able to keep this up, he's for sure the top arm at the deadline, and I do think that he'll be, you know, a guy that's moved at that point. So big day for Bieber. So let's jump over to our moments of the week real quick. So David, what was your moment?
Yes. So moment of the week was the very first home run of the season. And it was done by none other than Mike Trout, who, you know, has been off, right? He hasn't been quite the same. He's been injured, missed a lot of time. And I, you know, before tonight, I was like, man, I really want to pick Mike Trout's first home run. You know, it's nice to get a chance to think about him. And then he went and hit 2 more home runs tonight, including a 473-foot home run at Miami. If you've seen it, he hit it over the center field bar. So, you know, Mike Trout might be back, folks. And that is some exciting baseball news. Of course, the Angels lost that opening day game that Mike Trout hit that homer in, as is, you know, typical fashion for Mike Trout. But, you know, love the guy, love that he's back and hopefully, you know, performing well and can maybe stay healthy for the whole season here.
Just to make it even worse, we did not even mention Mike Trout last week talking about our awards predictions.
Yep.
We have no confidence that he's going to stay healthy. I mean,
right. Yeah, but
I would pray that he does, but he looks good so far. He's hit, like I said, 2 home runs tonight. The Angels are actually winning tonight too. So he contributed to a win instead of making the loss look better.
Right.
But yeah, my guy I picked, or my moment I picked, was the Reds on Sunday. They were down by a run in the ninth inning, and then Will Benson, who has had some clutch home runs in the past, you can ask Damian about that one. He hit a home run to tie the game against I think they were playing the Nationals, right?
Yep.
He tied the game, and the very next hitter comes up, and that is Encarnacion Strand, and he hit a home run to walk off the game on Sunday to win their first series of the year. And it was really cool. I mean, the Reds are a big deal on opening day. You know, they always open the season at home. It's kind of a tradition. And, you know, that opening weekend for them, there's a lot of excitement around that team this year. And just the ballpark was electric for that. And that's an exciting team. And it's kind of the way they were last year. I mean, they had a lot of clutch wins, late game wins, heroics. And it was really cool to see that kind of continue at the beginning of this year. And tonight they just hit a go-ahead grand slam in the 10th inning in their game tonight. So if the Reds are going to keep doing that this year, they're going to make some noise. And that was a really cool way for them to start their season, was winning that first series with the walk-off home run in the ninth inning when it looked like they were about to drop a series to the Nationals, which is not what you want to do this year. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I did not know until a few years ago that the Reds are the only team to always open at home every single year. They've never not opened at home. Yeah. I did not know that they were the only team. So that's a little fun fact. My moment of this week, I went with a homer pick. I try not to do homer picks most of the time, but this one was just, it was Sunday Night Baseball last night. The Dodgers were down 4-0. They got a run back there, and then Teoscar hit a homer. Then they pinch hit Max Muncy, and he hit a single to bring them within one. And then it was in the bottom of the eighth. They were down by one still. You know, they had a runner on second, and Muncy hit a go-ahead homer after they brought in a lefty to face him, a lefty reliever to face him. He had a go-ahead homer in the bottom of the eighth to put them ahead, and they ended up, you know, winning and closing that game out. So I tried not to, but I was lacking finding another one that I was really excited about. You know, there was the A's walk-off walk, which was kind of fun, and the Nolan Jones air today was a little interesting, but
oh god,
on a routine single, the ball going under his glove and rolling all the way to the wall for three runs. But
did I see correctly that was like his third error of the year already in left field?
Yeah, and then he got a throwing error to the cutoff man, so it's in four games he has four errors. Golly. Even though the cutoff man dropped the ball, but yeah, four errors in four games.
That's really, I mean, that's pretty bad for an outfielder. Yeah. Like, it's one thing if a shortstop has a couple of bad games back to back or something with errors, but with just a left fielder, that's hard to do.
It's hard to accumulate errors in the outfield. Yeah. That's for
it
sure.
It really is.
Yep. So that was my moment this week, and I'll promise not to have a homer pick next week. But anyways, that'll wrap up the first episode of the official regular season here for the Batflip podcast. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you guys back here next week.